This is another scenario where, what were these components of originally? You can see this red granite component continues underneath this piece. There's something here.
Something underneath here.
Half of a football field long, the length of these transverse tunnels. And there's tons of them.
This whole structure has crazy acoustic properties that get even more profound as we go through.
The cinematic entrance into the subterranean structure. Do our best. We're at the Saqqara site today, and we'll be done around 1.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, perfect. Shukran.
And usually, granted, people don't come this way. They through that way is the official main entrance.
But there's a couple of things that I'll show you on the way up through here. And then once we finish Pyramid of Wunis, then we'll check out the outside, do the newly opened southern tomb, which isn't a tomb at all, and you'll see why when we go down in there.
Right.
Some pretty crazy artifacts. So here, you see some hieroglyphs. These are original. And what is depicted here, which people will argue with you all day that this is impossible, but it's clearly depicted here. So what do we see here?
Looks like
columns.
Huge columns.
Huge pillars on a boat.
On a boat.
Yeah.
Right. And what this says here, this hieroglyphic inscription, you see the elephant right here?
Yes.
So this is describing the delivery of an order of quarried and finished granite pillars from Elephantine Island, which is in Aswan,
yeah,
which was a source for red granite quarries in ancient Egypt. So they're delivering this order of red granite pillars on boats coming from Elephantine Island.
Interesting.
So now we don't know the whole story about the mechanisms by which
they were transported.
These stones were loaded onto the boat and loaded off of the boat. That's definitely still a mystery. But they were moving massive quantities, specifically of red granite. When we were on the Giza Plateau, mm-hmm. and we talked about the core limestone of the pyramids was quarried directly from Giza. And they moved it right onto the pyramid site. But they were moving red granite from Aswan up the river. So the river flows from south to north. So the river is literally moving you in the direction right. that they were shipping okay. the stone. So it's flowing toward the Mediterranean, down the Nile, toward Giza. And that's what's happening here.
Interesting.
And this is a cool glyph over here. So this is a symbol called Nabu, which is the ancient hieroglyph for gold. So these guys, last time we were here, we heard a tour guide, an Egyptian guy, saying, oh, this is Shisha. This is Shisha. It's not fucking Shisha. This is gold, and these guys are
heating up a furnace
process yeah. for smelting or processing of gold. So this is Nabu here, this symbol. And this whole inscription is, they're basically like a glass blowing furnace.
Dude, why didn't he know blowing, that's Nabu?
I don't know whether it was joking or whether he was just saying that to facilitate the tourist experience and make a little joke about, oh, look, ancient
yeah,
Shisha.
Hitting the Shisha.
But it's definitely not Shisha. Right, this is gold right. processing right here, symbol Nabu.
Yeah, the star ceilings are everywhere, right?
Paint's still on that one. It's like,
yeah, so that's calcium copper silicate, which is known as Egyptian blue.
Yes,
which
yes.
is another piece of evidence for ancient industrial scale chemical manufacturing. So they had to make hundreds of thousands of gallons of just the paint. Egyptian blue is found across ancient sites all over Egypt and also all around the Mediterranean. And they found that it's chemically consistent and stable over thousands of years. Like the chemical composition of this material hasn't degraded for thousands of years. And also when they test samples from different locations, the chemical composition is consistent, right? So they weren't mixing random stuff in right. one batch here
very
and one batch
specific.
Over here. It had to be a very clearly articulated
right.
industrial scale process. So they've never found the site. There should be a site somewhere in Egypt, which was the ancient industrial complex for manufacturing Egyptian blue paint with massive kilns. And it requires very consistent temperatures. We've reproduced it today, also using very pure raw materials. So they have this list of raw materials, but how are the ancient Egyptians processing these raw materials to eliminate impurities that would have contaminated the final product? So Egyptian blue is one of those fantastic mysteries of the ancient world. Again, an indication of ancient industrial scale chemical processing and manufacturing, and also sort of a lost science of how they were actually doing these things. This is the Pyramid of Wanis. One thing that's unusual about this structure is it does contain funerary texts. It's the Book of the Dead, the Book of Coming Forth by Night. But I'll show you as we go through the passage, there's an indication that it's plaster and not limestone. So we'll go check this out. And I'm sure you can hear it on the video.
Okay.
This whole structure has crazy acoustic properties that get even more profound as we go through. So this part here is the red granite portcullis system. So here we have limestone, and these are three huge sections of red granite. And there used to be, like we saw in the Great Pyramid, huge slabs of red granite that were housed in these three niches. So this part was inaccessible
So here, you can literally see this is the hieroglyphs, right?
Yeah.
All over the chamber.
Yeah.
But to me, it really looks like these are plastered on. You can see where the plaster is coming over here. I don't think that's part of the original limestone.
Oh, you think they covered it up with this what hieroglyphs on it?
Well, it was inherited by the dynastic Egyptians who added the hieroglyphs in plaster. Uh-huh. You can see here, this material here continues over here.
Yes.
This is where the stone starts, but so there's a layer here that looks like the plaster, the beginning of the plaster.
Rose, the rose quartz granite is the original,
and the original chamber, material. The chamber itself is limestone. Whoa. So the transition from red granite into limestone starts here. All right. Here, can you see the flashlight? All right, so this chamber here, and there's a bunch of stuff I'll talk about. Specifically, these troughs at the top, which is a very unique feature that's 100% part of the function of the structure. The ceiling does not meet the edge of the wall.
You can still see a bit of the original Egyptian blue.
Yeah. Again, I think that was added later.
You think that was added? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's check this out. And you'll notice in here, no hieroglyphs.
Empty room. Wow. And the acoustics.
It's crazy. Yeah, completely empty chamber. There's three niches back here. And I had a tour guest come in here with me who is an acoustical engineer. And my hypothesis about this is for sound amplification that resonates through the rest of the structures.
Right.
He agreed with that it's configured like a speaker system, essentially, that provides huge resonance cavities that were used for the propagation of sound into the main chamber system. Here in the floor.
That is cool.
Limestone.
Mm-hmm.
And this?
Alabaster.
Alabaster, yeah, right.
Calcite crystal.
Right.
Same thing here on this wall. This is limestone. This is calcite crystal. So this entire section of the wall, this part here, and this part here, is all huge single slab. Of limestone. I mean, calcite crystal.
Calcite.
Yeah, alabaster.
Yeah.
Wow.
You see the difference
there.
The limestone
yeah.
And the calcite crystal.
Wow.
Mafish Noor? He's going to show us.
Okay.
What about your flashlight? This one's better. Yes, I know.
Statue?
All right. So he's going to show you.
Okay?
Yeah.
No statue, okay?
Yeah.
I know, okay? I see.
Okay, you see the figure?
Whoa.
And you see the belly button and then the arms?
Yeah. Wow.
Baby.
Yeah. Incredible.
Okay.
Yeah.
One more. No. Okay, take.
Yeah. Nothing.
Nothing there.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful.
Wow. That's incredible.
Hi, Vladi Corona.
Jay, something to note there. So you can see that the shadow figure is done using a different stone working technique.
than the glyphs that are inscribed on the wall.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Completely.
Which is something very significant to point out.
Yeah.
Again, if you look at this again here.
Yeah.
So look at the execution of the shadow figure here.
Yeah.
And the tool, hypothetically, that was used to do that, compared to this. So it's two completely different techniques that were used to do the shadow figure.
Yeah.
And that were used to do this.
That's incredible.
So this is a material called black greywack. You'll notice that the inside of the container is not finished, but the exterior of the container is finished with exceptional precision. I mean, just look how...
Yeah, even at an extreme light angle.
Yeah, it's like a marble countertop.
Yeah.
And again, this is a huge slab.
Oh, so
underneath the floor here.
Yeah.
Wow. It's like a sunset.
Yeah.
So it's just like this section.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Yeah, the back third of the chamber, the floor underneath this thing. And if you sneak back behind there, if you can squeeze back behind there, I'll show you something that we can talk about when we get on the outside. Okay, so now look at the wall. You'll notice that the hieroglyphs stop.
Oh, yes they do.
And we'll talk about why that's the case. Again, you can see here that this is the same crystal. You'll see.
And then
we'll talk about that when we get outside.
Interesting, interesting.
Yeah, that's important to
point
out.
We didn't go inside it, we went around the exterior and filmed the cyclopean.
So, the patched hole. So, there is a hole like this at the bottom of the northern inlet shaft of the Red Pyramid.
Right.
The Pyramid of Wanis, the Pyramid of Teti, the Pyramid of Menkaure, all have holes like this at the bottom of the descending shaft. This is where water was introduced into the structure. It's the inlet shaft.
Right.
Yeah. Water facilitated the whole process inside of the structure, both as a physics-based mechanism of operation for manipulating temperature and pressure, but also as a reactant. Of different anomalous features in the Eastern Temple adjacent to the Pyramid of Wanis, starting with this one here. So this is an underground chamber and labyrinth system. It's known as the Labyrinth of Hotep Sekhemwe, which predates, it's actually from Dynasty 2, according to conventional Egyptian timeline. So before the Step Pyramid, before the Pyramid of Wanis, Dynasty 2, this was here. It's an underground labyrinth. And we actually just had an opportunity to go inside of here the last time we were in Saqqara because there were no guards around.
We got the flashlight. I got the gloves. I'm going to do a little assessment of the trash and rubble situation here and just check for snakes and all that kind of good shit. But yeah, we're going to go down in there and have a little look-see. I remember when I was making the decision to move to Egypt, I was absolutely terrified. But I had the very profound realization that one day when I'm an old man, if I hadn't made that decision and I had let fear dictate my actions, that I would regret it. And I don't like to live my life with regrets. Repository for cigarette butts. Underground tunnel there leading to a chamber.
Oh shit. We're okay.
What'd you think?
And this is now available on my YouTube channel. It is filled with thousands of bats. Just all of the bats that you could imagine are down inside of that chamber. And this passageway leads to the other side. We'll see the other opening over there. You see that other fence around a big hole on the other side?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'll go down there and I'll show you the other opening. And there are transverse passages. So we have a passage this way and then transverse passages this way that are all below the floor of this Eastern temple. And they run back underneath the body and the core of the pyramid structure. It's a huge underground complex below the floor of this Eastern temple.
Wow.
So now we'll go check out. Scattered around here, you'll see pieces of calcite crystal. You can see the finish.
Oh wow, yeah, on this,
on
bit.
This piece right here, but this isn't necessarily the interesting part.
Yeah,
this piece here
where you've got the channel.
So in the evaluation of components across the pyramid sites, we have conduits or channels that are specifically for the movement of fluids. They're usually deeper channels because the deeper the channel, the less likely it is to clog with material. This channel is extremely shallow and would not be suitable for fluid movement or distribution throughout the complex. So what was it for? My hypothesis on this is that it's a housing for a copper, basically a wire. That this channel, this housing, would have had a piece of metal that ran through it. And that is the reason that this system has been disassembled. I'll show you pieces of this calcite conduit system. So also another important thing, this was under the paving stones. It was hidden. You would have never seen this component when the temple was in its original state.
Right.
So why, again, feel that. Why would you go through all of the effort to polish it?
Oh my gosh.
It's crazy.
I mean,
right?
It is like marble top.
It's
like,
wild.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's a lot of effort for something you're never going to see.
A lot of effort for something that was buried
right
under. So these are the paving stones.
Yeah.
This is the floor.
Yeah. And then this is situated underneath the floor.
Underneath. So again, you have to think about logistics, right? So if your pipe clogs, how are you going to unclog that pipe if it's buried underneath the
right,
floor of
right,
the temple?
Right.
It'd be a very difficult
very
and
difficult.
Unnecessary undertaking. And I'll show you a comparison between the size and dimensions of this channel, which to me don't indicate fluid distribution, but rather housing for a physical component. Could be a metal bar
right
that was housed in there.
And do you think the copper wiring kind of ties into the potential acoustic like resonance nature of the temple sites or
so
as a functionality?
We have seen evidence, even written evidence in the Grand Egyptian Museum that describes these temples as laboratories.
Right.
They are for processing, measuring, quality control, and other additional processes that are related to the chemical manufacturing that was occurring inside of the pyramid structure. So you have your manufacturing facility and then your processing. We have the same thing in modern industrial scale chemical facilities where you have a QA lab where they take samples, they do other additional mixing, etc.
Right.
So this is a small scale laboratory, and it's literally written at the Egyptian Museum. They have a case full of laboratory glassware. It looks like beakers and distillation columns, wow, and flasks and all this stuff.
We might have missed that.
And
when
there's
we
a
went
plaque.
To the gym.
Oh, dude, it's the most obscure case, yeah, in the entire museum. It's hidden in the back corner.
Just tucked away.
But
yeah,
it has a plaque that says the temples were laboratories.
So I'm going to cut in real quick just to highlight some important points that further validate the idea that acoustics and naturally occurring electrical harvesting may have played a role at this complex in Saqqara. What we're looking at here, these highly polished alabaster blocks with precise conduit-like channels, these were not sitting out in the open. They were positioned beneath multi-ton limestone paving stones in areas immediately adjacent to the Unas Pyramid. Once they were installed, they were completely hidden from view and essentially inaccessible, which means they were never intended for regular maintenance. That alone suggests a long-term, deliberate purpose, possibly symbolic, possibly energetic. Now, the Unas Pyramid complex is already unique for its integrated acoustic engineering. You've got dense rose granite, resonant white limestone, and geometrically tuned passageways that naturally amplify and focus sound, both in the audible and in the low frequency range. Acoustic studies have confirmed that this is not coincidence, the architecture itself is an instrument. And here's where it gets interesting. If we look at the president from the Sahur complex at Abbasir, excavated in the early 1900s, we know that architects were clearly embedding copper conduits into channels beneath the floors. In Sahur's case, those ran for hundreds of meters. And so there is already documented fact of concealed engineered conduits that were part of the architectural toolkit. Now, if we swap out Sahur's limestone channels for polished alabaster blocks, we have something entirely different in character. From a material science standpoint, alabaster or calcite is a non-conductive dielectric. It makes an excellent insulator, protecting a copper conductor from corrosion and even shaping the electric field around it. Copper itself, of course, is one of the best conductors of low-frequency currents, whether from telluric flows in the ground or induced environmental electromagnetism. So if you encase that in alabaster, you've got a guided transmission line, possibly part of a larger network. And here's the synergy. Alabaster also transmits vibration extremely well. In the Unas Pyramid complex, any sound, chanting, drumming, even low resonances, would pass through the limestone floors into the alabaster below, and from there into any copper within it. And that vibration could create small electrical fluctuations in the copper, a microphonic effect. It's exactly the principle used in certain types of sensors and microphones today.
And even at the Temple of Hathor in Dendara, there is a specific alcove of that temple that even according to the conventional nomenclature is described as the laboratory of the temple.
Wow.
So they were using the copper wire and the distribution of electric current from lightning for processes and also related to telluric currents, which gives you a more steady, lower voltage current flow. They were harnessing that electricity for alchemical processes within these laboratories. So we're going to follow this channel that stops right there.
Oh, and here it is.
Do another piece here.
Yep.
So this thing ran throughout the entire temple complex, connecting different components of the structure. Unfortunately, we'll never know the original configuration of the entire network because all the pieces are gone.
Yep.
And they disassembled this to pop the metal out.
There's another piece over there by the looks of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So so these are limestone. In the floor of the temple, we'll walk back to the boat pit so we can jump in the boat pits and take a look at that.
But what about this rose granite over here? Is that another channel?
Yeah, yeah. So that's my comparison piece.
Right.
So there's all sorts of... So this is a housing Again, you remember this is the paving. This is another part of the entrance into the temple facility where you can see a door closure. So these are hinges for doors. So there would have been a huge closure here. These laboratories were protected, secure facilities that are always guarded by huge doors. Again, same thing, the comparison to our modern industrial scale facility. You can't just walk in, you know, unless you have permission and you're supposed to be there.
Exactly.
So these were guarded, secured facilities, and you always see huge doors that are securing the entrance to the temple area. So for size comparison, we see these types of channels all over the Giza Plateau. Did you see the one in the Eastern Temple of the Central Pyramid?
Yep.
It has the same dimensions. Look at the size of this one, which you could easily stick a modern PVC pipe into this, and it would be the ideal dimensions for fluid distribution. But that one, you can stick one finger in there.
Yeah, it's just not deep enough.
It's not deep enough.
No.
This has a nice little core tubular drill here. Now, again, this is another scenario where what were these components of originally? Because they're just strewn about and we have no idea where this would have fit or where this would have fit. This is another piece of it here on this side. So you can see that this was a part of a fluid distribution system within the temple. Where the hell did these things go originally?
Right.
And we'll never know because they were most likely found like this, documented in situ by the original archaeologists, and we'll never be able to reassemble the original configuration. So this is a sliding closure and lock mechanism. If you look up here, you'll see that this side tapers in.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see the locking component here. Come check this out. So you can even stick your camera down in there and get a good view of the trapezoidal shape here. So these pieces taper in and it locks here into the component at the bottom.
And you can even see like there's a little, like there was one possibly here.
Yeah, there would have been another piece here that slid down and locked into place here. Okay, so the question you should be asking yourself is why? Why is there this type of mechanical component on this side of a burial structure? It's not the entrance, we just went through the entrance.
Right.
So this isn't connected in any way to the original opening into the chamber system. So what is it connected into? They refer to this area as the so-called offering hall. They have these offering halls adjacent to all of these pyramids. And I don't know if you saw it where you went the other day, but did you see the conduit system in the collection bowl where you went the other day that we're not going to say on camera?
Oh, yes. You did see it.
Okay, so that system connects into an offering hall on the side of the pyramid. So I think here, you can see this red granite component continues underneath this piece. There's something here.
Something underneath here.
That connects into the pyramid structure. Because there's absolutely no need for this sliding, locking mechanical component unless there was something here that had to be locked and open.
Absolutely.
So again, remember below here, there's a passage that runs from here to here, and then there are long tunnels. I mean, I would say probably half of a football field long, the length of these transverse tunnels. And there's tons of them.
this structure continues back in that direction to where we just were.
Right.
And then it goes further in this direction.
Yo, that's deep.
Yeah, it's deep.
There's a lot going on.
Yep.
Thousands of bats.
Did they chase you?
Well, so they were immediately disturbed as soon as we started walking down in there in the footage. So I shine my flashlight up.
Yeah.
And they start pouring out of the ceiling. Just hundreds and hundreds of bats just dumping out of the system.
That's wild.
And every time I turned a corner to look down,
you'd unleash more bats.
More bats just swarming the camera.
Damn.
So I didn't know that when we were going down there. This here was another pyramid. This is an opportunity to differentiate between different types of geology. So here, this is red quartzite, which is a different type of stone than the red granite.
Yeah.
So here we have red granite.
Higher quartz content in this.
Red quartzite. So the main difference, so here you have smaller fragments of quartz in a different chemical composition of the matrix stone.
And you get big chunky bits of quartz in this.
Yeah, red quartzite, red granite here, red quartzite here, also has huge pieces of flint. You can see the flint embedded in the stone. You have a lot larger chunk and a different chemical composition of the stone matrix. So it is red. It also contains quartz, but you do have two different types of stone, red granite and red quartzite.
Have you been out to Tanis?
No.
Oh, I really would love to go out to Tanis. Is that a restricted area as well?
No. My company can arrange tours out there. We just never been. So also, red quartzite here. These fragments are huge pieces of red quartzite. And then this is alabaster, the same crystal material.
We saw glowing.
Calcite crystal, yep, that is embedded in the floor here. And so turn around, doing a sweeping shot of what we have left here, and envision in your mind, this was originally a two-story facility. And I'll show you the stairs that would have taken you up to the second floor of this temple laboratory complex. And there's absolutely nothing left today of a two-story, huge two-story facility.
So what do you think explains that? Just a lot of looting and desolation over time, or natural disaster?
So the conventional explanation is quarrying
of
the site. Any quarryable materials have been removed by all of the civilizations that have come through Egypt in the antique time and also in the relatively modern time.
Right.
So everyone has taken from these sites in terms of removing stones.
Right.
That would be the conventional explanation is quarrying.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of evidence that that was happening. We didn't get to do the central pyramid, but there's lots of stones around the central pyramid where you can see quarry marks where they were harvesting red granite and other stones off the side of the pyramid.
But what do you think?
I agree with that because there is a lot of evidence that that was happening. But I also think that there was, well, we know that there was a number of things that happened around 5000 BC in the Middle East Mediterranean area in terms of floods and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
so it could be geological trauma.
Correct. So I, you know, obviously I believe that these are functional structures.
Yeah.
And there had to be a significant reason that these structures went offline.
Right.
So I believe that they were operational during a time period called the Saharan Humid Period, which was around 8500 BC to around 5300 BC when these things were kicking and running.
Right.
But around 5300 BC, let's say the system is calibrated to use a specific amount of water. All of a sudden, the rains stop and the desiccation of the Sahara starts turning farmland and agricultural areas that were prevalent during the Saharan Humid Period into the desert. So your calibration of water is gone. Not to mention there were floods in the Black Sea and all sorts of other environmental catastrophes that happened around that time period. There were floods that happened that could have caused internal damage to the structures, you know, damaging pumps and other sort of components that would have taken the system offline. Main reason being the Sahara Desert turning back into a desert and all of the water that was used to calibrate the system was no longer there.
Right.
So they dried out and they were no longer functional.
That's it.
There you go.
You have the same thing in Abu Sir at the Pyramid of Sahure, where you see these steps
going to nowhere
that would have originally gone to a second level of the structure, which it's no longer there. Exists. That's all that's left. Reminds me of like Mesoamerican polygonal style masonry.
Right.
And it also is very reminiscent of the style of masonry that we see in the Valley Temple.
Yes.
So again, I was saying what's behind us is a very different style of masonry, much smaller blocks. It looks completely different than what we see here. So the conventional story is these are just more boat pits. Definitely not boat pits. I will say, it does have a vaguely boatish
shape, yeah.
But there's also one over here that's completely buried, right next to it. This here is another one. Well, you'll notice there's two different configurations of these things. This one is much higher and has a much steeper incline.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And completely buried in the sand. Let's jump down in here and I'll show you the reason why I think these might not be boat pits.
That's a big block.
It's an anomaly. All right, so where did this piece come from? It's not a part of the wall.
No, it's
not. It's a completely different size as the wall blocks. So A, where the hell did this thing come from? And who moved it down in here?
Yeah.
You know, this
is for what purpose?
1900s early archaeology that moved this thing out of the way. You know, what the hell is this thing and why is it down in here?
You got any thoughts on that?
No. Those things were
just a full-on anomaly.
I have no idea.
No idea
what that was a piece of. So imagine this is just a fragment of a block.
Yeah.
So the original block was been.
Do you think this might be another piece of that block, like just down here?
It's certainly possible.
Yeah.
So we noticed this the last time that we were in here. What I mean, it's completely filled with sand and trash. You stick your camera in there, and it goes down. So, possibly either a drainage or fill shaft for this system, which, given the length of the subterranean labyrinth complex that runs below this, I wouldn't be at all surprised if this system, a huge reservoir above ground, is connected directly into the subterranean labyrinth chamber system that runs below all this area. So the Persians were the first people that re-inhabited and reutilized the area of Saqqara as the first archaeological museum. And they built a bunch of structures here. This one specifically is known as one of the Persian tombs. And the entrance that we're going to go through today into the Step Pyramid was also said to have been excavated by the Persians. Not an original part of the structure, but they came back here and they were doing the same thing we're doing today, archaeological tourism at the site. You see the size of that lid? So the size of the lid is just, you know, maybe 5 feet on each side to the size of this pit. And obviously they've never fully excavated this thing because you can't haul that thing out. So that's just a lid. Imagine the size of the container.
So again, maybe take 5 feet on each side from the edges of the pit. That is the dimensions of the lid. And the container itself, so you see this first strata to that crack right there? That's probably how big and how deep this
That's incredible.
Container
is. That is insane.
Do they know of any entry points, or is it all just top down?
So we have had corroborated, you'll see over here these covered shafts, by some of the archaeologists on site. I have a friend that's one of the lead archaeologists here that says these are pits that go down into the bedrock, very similar to what we see on Giza, where the deep vertical shafts are connected by transverse passages, where everything is linked via the underground system.
Right.
So they don't know for sure, but it has been proposed by an archaeologist, actually an Egyptian Ministry of Antiquities employee, one of the lead archaeologists here on site. And again, you talk to these guys privately and they all know about stuff. They're very open to all sorts of alternative hypotheses about the construction methods. And we know the lead inspector of the Giza Plateau, who's, you know, he said some stuff on camera, on camera that I have on the channel, where he's corroborating connecting underground shafts that link the Great Pyramid into the Sphinx enclosure.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing.
Red Pyramid.
Yeah, Bent Pyramid.
Bent Pyramid. And if you look to the left, you see that black mound of what looks like nothing?
Yes, that's Dahshur.
That's the Black Pyramid of Dahshur. Yep. So you can see all three.
That's amazing. What a view.
Yeah.
So when we were at Giza, we were talking about the role of the pyramid structures in manufacturing a series of acidic solutions for metal ore mining and processing, amongst other applications that are also connected to fertilizer and various other industrial applications. So here in Saqqara, we have a hydrocarbon processing facility. The main takeaway for the function of the Egyptian pyramids is that they were designed to work in conjunction with the forces of nature, not only in the power source from telluric currents and lightning, but also utilizing the abundant natural resources here in Egypt, for example, hydrocarbon deposits, which are prevalent across Egypt, as the source of the raw materials for the chemical manufacturing operations. And I'll show you when we go inside the Bent Pyramid that it's literally built on top of a bedrock deposit of methane, the Step Pyramid.
Yeah.
And on the Giza Plateau, we were talking about the direct source of hydrogen sulfide gas that comes from the cave system below Giza.
Right.
So the Great Pyramid was utilizing that hydrogen sulfide gas to create sulfuric acid. Here in Saqqara, the Step Pyramid was extracting bedrock deposits of methane that were later converted into chemicals like methanol within the Pyramid of Wunis. And then we'll go to the Serapeum, which my hypothesis for the function of the Serapeum is for the production of hydrogen. The cinematic entrance into the subterranean structure. This is known as the Southern Tomb. It's a huge, vertical, rectangular, bedrock excavated chamber that emulates what we'll see inside of the Step Pyramid. But the unique thing about this is what you'll see down at the bottom of this shaft system. It's absolutely crazy. And so obviously the staircase that we're currently walking on is not an original part of the structure.
Obviously. Shukran Sahib.
Here is also restoration. And you can take a look at this thing from the top.
and then we'll go down in there and look at it from below. It's made of multiple slabs of red granite. The one inside the step pyramid is 32 pieces of red granite, with the plug being the 33rd piece. And you'll notice here that this one also has a plug in the top of the container. And the original archaeological excavations showed that this container was lined with copper.
Whoa.
So the entire inside of this thing was like a copper vessel with a plug in the top of it. Vantage point where you can see that the plug is two pieces, so it goes in like a feather wedge, like this. And you can also see that there's a rim. It's like a wine bottle cork.
That has a rim
around it.
Yes, it's like it's been corked.
So it's a plug, cork. It's a plug. Exactly. So again, what is the function of this mechanism other than for gas containment? Right, so you have a plugged, pressurized container that was lined on the inside with copper. And that plug could be released. Let's say that this whole thing was filled with water. Your gas is going to percolate up to whatever was originally at the top of this system, because the gas is going to rise through the water. And you can also use water percolation, which is just gas bubbles moving through water, to clean chemicals. So for example, for removing impurities from methane gas, like sulfides, all you have to do is bubble it through water, which is a purification mechanism for hydrocarbon extraction.
Right.
Huge pieces of red granite. I don't know the exact count on this one, but I do know the one inside of the step pyramid is 32 pieces, and the plug is the 33rd piece.
Are these like bricked in sections?
So all restoration. And this was also an area that was repurposed during the Ptolemaic period. So there's Greek and Roman burials and niches and all sorts of other stuff. We'll see the same thing when we go in the Serapeum, that that's also been repurposed during the Ptolemaic period. And this door here leads into yet another subterranean tunnel and passage chamber system. You have to get special permission to go into the subterranean levels of both the step pyramid and the southern tomb. They're huge pieces of red granite.
Ooh. Wow.
So again, the reason that they utilized pieces of granite instead of a whole single piece. So we'll see in the Serapeum that clearly they had the capability of carving single pieces of granite into containers. Here, it was for the installation of the copper metal vessel on the inside that was cased in red granite to contain the pressure. This whole thing is a massive pressure containment system for storage of pressurized gas. And originally this structure was enclosed. It wasn't open on the top. To access the main chamber is not an original part of the structure. It was later excavated by the Persians, which was the first civilization to break into the inner chamber of the step pyramid. notice here, we start to have some transition. So you remember the color of the bedrock in the southern tomb?
Yep.
Was yellow. Look at the color of this.
Right, dark. Much darker.
This is soot. So they used to have candles here.
Right. Okay, yeah.
Or something. And you can see the soot.
Yeah.
It's rising up out. So this is soot. The bedrock itself is permeated. So this, in terms of geological fossil fuel investigation, or looking for hydrocarbon deposits, this is exactly what the cap of a deep bedrock methane natural gas deposit looks like. And this black material is a result of the ancient decayed organic matter that is embedded in the limestone bedrock that causes the formation of these natural gas deposits deep within the earth. So this facility was utilized for the extraction of those bedrock methane deposits. So 32 pieces of red granite, the central plug being the 33rd piece of the component. And a couple interesting things to note from an archaeological perspective. You see that huge crack in the bedrock there?
Yep.
Yeah. The whole structure is gradually, slowly but surely, collapsing. I'll show you a structure called the Pyramid of Userkaf, which we were the first people to get special permission access into the Pyramid of Userkaf in more than a decade. And Raghav, he's our archaeologist friend that works here in Saqqara. He was the one that came with us inside of the structure. I've known Raghav. I met him in 2017 when I was here with Yusuf.
Right.
And we've become friends since then.
Oh, that's great.
Really, really good contact and a solid dude.
Nice.
When we walk back out, you'll see the diagram that there was an enclosure around this structure, and there's indications that this entire passage chamber system, the Serapeum or Serapeum, however you want to pronounce it, was filled with water. As I was saying before, water is always a mechanism of operation,
right,
or a chemical reactant. And you can look here and see how smooth the sides are of this, which are indicative of the repetitive filling process. Smooth all of this out. We don't see chisel marks like we see in excavated areas. Okay, so there's two branches of this system. Do you have the flashlight? So we'll walk down this way first, and then we'll go this way.
Okay.
So this is just a lid.
This is just a lid, bro.
Talking earlier about the niches that were excavated later. So this is an example of those niches or alcoves that were used for votive offerings, statues, etc. in this little area. And then when we turn the corner here, you'll get your first glimpse at the full size of one of these container objects. There's a number of things to discuss about this particular one, specifically the space required to move this.
Right,
you can see the container itself almost fills the entire width of the passageway. So the manipulation and the movement of these containers within the system is still a mystery for how exactly they got these things down inside here. Moving it straight is one thing, but then turning it, moving it into a niche, and then setting it down into the housing is a whole other story.
Uh-huh.
So they had some civil engineers come down inside of here, and they calculated the weight of the stone, the volume of water displacement, and they thought that perhaps these things were filled with like a bladder of air.
Right.
And possibly that facilitated the movement where these things were like floated in here. Completely impossible.
Mm.
You can't fill these things with enough air, no matter what type of gas you use, to float this thing in through the Serapeum, which would have been one way to move these things in and out of here. Well, you'll also start to see that these things were finished in situ. They were brought in a rough state. You can see this one. They were going to eventually finish this part off here.
Yeah, they never finished it.
And it would have been a straight line.
Yeah, you can see.
And you'll see evidence of this with a lot of the other artifacts in here, that they were still in the process of finishing these things.
Oh.
And there's not much in here. We'll walk around to the other side. It's just more of the passageway. At some point, the project was abandoned. The containers that they were moving into the system were abandoned, left in the middle of the tunnel, and they left.
Right, right.
So we'll go down here, and then we'll take a look at all these as we walk back up. So I have a full series on my channel with a research episode explaining all of the mechanisms of operation, the physics and chemistry that make this thing work, and also an on-site expedition where we're gonna do the same thing. We were talking in situ about how this system operated. And I'll give you a quick rundown when we get to the first example. So here, this is just an empty housing, which there's a couple of interesting things to point out. Look in the floor here, and you can see that the floor is excavated down. See these niches on each side?
Yep.
And there's a housing here where the container doesn't sit on the floor. The container is anchored down into the floor.
Into the floor, yeah.
So it is locked into place. This is important for the function of the structure. So if this is just the bull burial, why not just sit the container on top of the floor? Why does it have to be locked into an excavated housing in the bedrock? And they set the containers down into housing so that they were physically locked into place. A couple of interesting things to point out about the lids. You'll notice these dimples in the lids, and I'll show you several other examples. So the dimples were created to remove cracks from the lids. Any imperfection in the container was removed. Because when these things were in operation, small cracks would have turned into catastrophic damage. So they had to remove any imperfections, no matter how small. And that's what those dimples are, a result of removing cracks. So the question should be, how did they make them so smooth?
Right.
In my opinion, they were acid etched, where you create a reservoir of like a clay, for example, around the crack. You fill the crack with an acidic solution, it dissolves out the crack, then you neutralize the solution to stop the reaction, you can wipe the thing out, it effectively removes the crack without the need for additional stonework, and then it leaves you with a smooth dimple. So that way you don't have to hammer or chisel or whatever tool it was that would make the crack worse. Well, you use chemicals. I'm not a guide, I'm a friend. This is my Sadiki. Okay,
he's a friend, he just knows a lot.
So same situation here, where this is the finished part and this part was unfinished. So you see that they were going to remove the rest of this material on the top and flatten this surface out. So this hasn't been removed yet. This part was finished. This part is unfinished. Another part of the mystery of the Serapeum, how are you lighting this system? You know, what's the light source? These people weren't in here working in the dark, but they were finishing these things once they had been set into place. Good
this is another just really good example of the dimples, where they removed any cracks from the lid. And these are all black granite, the ones that we've seen thus far.
Yeah, just more dimples in the top where they were removing cracks out of here. And we'll actually get a chance to go down. Here you can actually feel it. You can see how smooth even the dimples are.
Yeah, it's like all smoothed out. These things are incredible.
So again, for perspective, our friend Jeff here is 6 foot.
Yep.
So these are very, very large blocks of granite. And look how shiny it is on the bottom, the mirror, like polish.
This is where an imperfection.
Yeah, look at it. I mean, it's such an obvious.
So what most likely happened here is there was a crack or a fracture in the surface where even that had to be polished down and finished.
Yeah, the scale is incredible. And the mainstream interpretation is that these were sarcophagi for the Apis bulls.
Based on what would that other vendor just big?
I'll show you at the top of the system. There is one container that has an inscription of a bull on it.
And that's it, that's all they need.
And I'll show that to you.
That's all they need.
Of the Apis bull.
So this is the one thing use.
So in the other one at the end of the hall, we have the unfinished cartouche. This one has the finished cartouche and your Apis bull.
And is this literally the only one that they use?
This is it.
This is the reason why they attributed to the Apis bulls.
Yep.
That made no sense, guys.
The inside was always finished before the outside was finished.
And it is incredible on the inside.
Yeah, look at that.
It really is incredible on the inside.
Yeah, and unfortunately they blew it up with dynamite.
British explorers or some assholes.
Yep.
Tally-ho!
Yeah.
This one's red granite.
And these are original. These bosses here that were part of the construction and moving process.
You can really see how it's locked in place.
It's sunk down into the bedrock here. The whole thing is sat down into the floor.
It would just slide down into place.
In both directions, like every direction.
Yeah, these things are truly mysterious.
The lid that you'll see on the way out is the lid for this one. And these, I will say, are actually executed to a level of completion that is compatible with the stonework of the box.
Right.
So you see some examples where that's not always the case, where the hieroglyphs don't necessarily match the stonework. But if you look at these, look at the execution of these vertical lines, and the execution of the hieroglyphs is very much similar to the quality of the stone
itself. It's not
just
like chicken scratch that's been put on there. It's actually chiseled in and a part of it.
Sand,
we gotta be done. Okay. Yeah. Halas. In here, there's actually a blue sandstone.
In this one?
In this one, yeah. It's broken into a million fragments, but it's absolutely beautiful. High micro crystalline quartz content blue sandstone.
Wow.
And I have footage of that available on my channel.
I didn't even know that there was a blue sandstone.
Yeah, but you can go inside of that with special permission from the Ministry of Antiquities. A very, very bizarre structure, not only in the internal configuration, but also in the components in the exterior temple. And you'll see the opening as we roll. Roll your window down, Ken. Please, sir. Okay. Yeah, and this huge hole that you're about to see is the opening into the
structure.
Oh yeah, there it is.
Nice. Exclusive footage from inside available at the Land of Kev.